Hey, how's it going, Shot Fam? How you doing? I know it's been quite the weekend and the week, but you know, we wanted to say at least a little something about it before jumping into another episode. We believe Black Lives Matter here, you know, but also doing this pod is a reprieve for me. For 4 hours, I get to watch bald, sweaty men wrestle each other and get into real fast cars and take a break from all that. So we're hoping that, you know, listen to us talk about that will be a reprieve for you. And hopefully you don't think we're not paying attention to what's going down.
Who Shot You has always been a show about centering different voices and diverse voices in movie criticism and talking about pop culture in general. And obviously we're in a really weird and scary place right now, but we certainly are getting through this with each other's help here on the show, me, Drea, Iffy, and Casey. And we hope that being there for you guys this week, you know, will make a difference. We'll be at least just a little bit of respite from everything terrible you see on the news. But until this is past us, you know, take care of yourselves, take care of each other, stay safe, stay healthy, and, you know, be strong.
Yes, backing all of that up, I know that I look forward to recording these with the same idea of getting a moment to connect with friends about something frivolous. And doing that with as little guilt as possible while trying to remain supportive and active in my community. And I hope you feel the same way out there and are staying safe and righteous and doing all that you're able to.
Yes, this is producer Casey here. I just wanted to chime in and say that, you know, this show has always been, we've prioritized highlighting, you know, diverse voices in films, and you know, that's always been the point of the show, and we don't want to serve as a distraction to what's going on. We're right with you. We are hoping that we can add something positive to your week, and we'll motivate you to keep paying attention and to do all that you can to help out. So we're just here for you, and we hope that you enjoy this episode. Anything else you want to add, Iffy?
No, you know, if you're wondering what you can do, I think it's just speaking out, speaking to people. It doesn't always have to be monetary. There are actually a ton of great guides online of ways you can help. There are different YouTube videos that are monetized right now that you can go visit that are going to donate all their funds to movements. So even if you can't contribute, you can just click a little video, have it on in the background, and help that way. So, you know, we're doing everything we can, and honestly, stay safe, take care of yourself, and hope you enjoy this episode.
Next spring.
This just went from Mission Impossible to Mission of Freaking Sanity.
We stick to the plan. If you're gonna survive, stop thinking like a cop.
This model is fully loaded.
You're in my world now.
Fast Five.
Welcome to the third episode of Who Shot Ya Presents the Fast Cast. I'm your host, Iffy Whitey Way, and today is the third installment of our month-long series of episodes where we dissect and discuss every Fast and Furious film there is. And today we're going to discuss the fifth and sixth films in the franchise, Fast Five and Fast and Furious Six. Of course, I had to bring in the family. So we have Alonzo Duralde and Drea Clark. How are y'all doing?
God damn it, we're family.
We ride together, we die together.
That's Bad Boys, but I love it. I still love it.
Girl, it is Bad Boys, but they said it like four times in these two movies.
We also had to bring in the podcast version of The Rock. We've got actor, comedian, host of the podcast, High and Mighty, and Action Boys, the number one fuck boy, John Gabris. Welcome.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. I am the rock to this podcast in that thank you for adding me, but me and Iffy are going to have contractually obligated fights in which I refuse to look like a loser.
So before we get started, John, what's your relationship with the Fast and Furious films?
I've been a member of the family since I saw the first movie in the theaters. Mm-hmm. But my love was re-upped with Fast Five, which I also saw in the theaters back in New York. And that just kicked it up a notch for me because I was tired of like I like a Marvel movie where no one has superpowers technically, but I like less justification to the insane skill sets of different people. And so when Fast Five came back and they brought in The Rock and they added charisma to the film, I just fucking, I've been on board. It's monotonous AF, especially if you watch two of these back to back, but I will tell you, I love these movies, but like only a quarter mile at a time.
To start things off, let's give a quick synopsis of 2011's Fast Five from IMDb.
Former cop Brian O'Connor partners with ex-con Dom Toretto on the opposite side of the law. Since Brian and Mia Toretto broke Dom out of custody, they've blown across many borders to elude authorities. Now backed into a corner in Rio de Janeiro, they must pull one last job in order to gain their freedom. As they assemble their elite team of top racers, the unlikely allies know their only shot of getting out for good means confronting the corrupt businessman who wants them dead. He's not the only one on their tail. Hard-nosed federal agent Luke Hobbs never misses his target. When he's assigned to track down Dom and Brian, he and his strike team launch an all-out assault to capture them. But as his men tear through Brazil, Hobbs learns he can't separate the good guys from the bad. Now he must rely on his instincts to corner his prey before someone else runs them down first.
That hurt to listen to.
Look, I've been also, training to be a movie
guy. Do you need a gargle
guy
now? Like,
you also read that whole thing, and like John said, watching both of these in the span of a week when we've also just watched the previous four movies, you read that, and I was like, ooh, I'm totally conflating these two. These two movies are just a smorgasbord of ridiculousness at this point. Like,
It comes out of where's the hideout in this one? Yeah. And, you know.
For me, I always delineate which one, because it's hard to keep track of the movies in your head, especially, like, I've seen all of them multiple times, but I still have to be like, who's the 13th cast member in this one? Because that's how you know. Oh, is it Kurt Russell? Is it Jason Statham? No. Is it The Rock? Like, whoever the number 21 on the call sheet is, like, that's how you delineate which movie is which.
One of the great moments for me as a film critic in the last decade or so was attending the press screening of Fast Five, because everybody sort of trudged in dutifully, like, okay, another one of these things. And somewhere around the first, like, train heist where they're just slingshotting the cars out of the side and running them down backwards in a ramp, you could feel the whole room kind of go, oh, we're doing this now. Oh, okay. And by the end of the movie, when you get the little button in the credits that sets up six, people went bananas. And it was like, okay, great. We are not even pretending these movies are set on Earth anymore. Let's do it.
Yeah. That's what the fun thing that, you know, we'll get to in six that they kind of jump over is the main thing they, like, rammed in our heads in Fast and Furious, is that she was shot and the car blew up. the guy pulled the trigger. We keep seeing the trigger go. She's shot. Somehow, though, it just took out her memory. You know, kind of. I felt like they were like, there was a conversation about this and people were like, she got shot and she just ruined her misery. They're like, well, Kill Bill kind of did it. So we'll just say it's a Kill Bill.
As the world turns.
Yeah. And by she, if he's referring to Michelle Rodriguez's character of Letty, which her departure pretty early on in the last movie was a big surprise and didn't really have a huge narrative payoff there. Also, even more ridiculous this time of, like, needing to kind of balance out. Wait, no, is she still dead in five? You guys, they're all blurred in my head. When did she go back?
At the end of six. Five, we learn she's still
that's
alive.
That's right. Yes. This one. Oh,
at the end of five, Dominic Toretto visits the Lazarus pit where she's being reborn.
Sadly, I think it's Eva Mendes' only other foray into this franchise. And she's got to be like, for real? For real?
I'm going to hand a file folder to The Rock. That's my job today? Okay.
Well, not only that, I'm going to hand the file folder to The Rock of a different Latina actress that is going to be starring in the next movie. Like, it feels awful in a way where it's like, here you go, The Rock. replace me with Michelle Rodriguez next movie. Yeah.
I know you can only have one of us, apparently, so.
Yeah.
Okay, before we get into whatever's coming next, I do just want a blanket statement that this time when I was watching, I realized, oh, I don't always think of Iffy when Tyrese is on screen because I know of Iffy's love of Tyrese, but that Tyrese is playing the Iffy Wadaway character. Pierce in these movies gives me so much Iffy energy. It is stupid. When he goes to hand out vouchers to a buffet in Vegas to a private plane full of women, because he's like, ooh, I got my heist call, I gotta turn it around. I was like, Iffy.
Wait, can we talk about Roman for a second? First of all,
oh yeah.
Iffy, I think he is got your energy, but you are a comedian, so you know how to be funny. Like, I love the comic relief of a movie is just a guy who like is scared for like 2/3 of it. It's like, it's the most Vin Diesel shit ever. It's like, you know what's funny? When men are afraid. It's like,
okay. not me, but other men.
Yeah. And look, also they're like, we need a guy who could talk his way into anywhere. It's like, how about a black guy who doesn't speak Portuguese at all? Let's send him into a Brazilian police station. Where,
oh my gosh.
Because he can talk his way in anywhere. Yeah, hopefully the guy at the counter speaks English.
I'm glad Brian O'Connor hung on to his FBI ID card South Fast. But just to put this out there, like, pretty much the only reason I even agreed to do this whole thing again was for this episode. Because 5 and 6, for me, this is thing at its peak. In fact, as much as I love Tokyo Drift, I think that 5, 6, and 7 are sort of the original Star Wars trilogy of this franchise.
Yeah.
So 5 is Star Wars and 6 is Empire. So I'm very happy to have watched these again. It makes the rest of this ordeal worth it.
Yeah, well, 5 is where they go from a Point Break with cars to this is Avengers with cars. And it kind of really points at, like, Vin Diesel. I know there's more of a creative team behind this film, but Vin Diesel is sort of the front man and has produced, and he's kind of openly talks about how much he does for the films. But you got to credit him. He's like, well, people are loving superhero shit. Like, I feel like that's about to start pop. And it's 2011. It's early in the Marvel domination. Yeah. And he's like, bro, what if Dominic Toretto soars across, this is Fast 6. What if Dominic Toretto soars across a bridge? Or what if Dominic Toretto somehow holds his own in a fight against Hobbs?
Dominic Toretto and Brian O'Connor somehow survive a 500-foot leap off of a canyon into a body of water?
Oh my god, that was so wild.
Next to them.
With the car that they sort of surf down.
Well, there's also this movie features
dead.
Yeah, this movie features insane car accidents where main characters are in cars that just spiral off and flip upside down. And thanks to like the layout of how these movies work, you know, if it's not the last minute of the movie, that Roman and Tej, Roman's fine. Like, there's no way he dies that way. But his car is upside down, scraping where tank rounds are being fired at.
At the very beginning, that whole bus flips over like 4 times and not a single person dies. You know those prisoners do not have seatbelts sitting in that thing.
Yeah, All right, well, first off, out of 5 sleeveless shirts, how would we rate the ridiculousness of the title of the film? By the way, for those listening at home, John flexed in his sleeveless shirt and his gigantic Long Island tattoo.
I knew this was Iffy's podcast, so I knew Iffy was on this podcast, so I assumed we'd be sleeveless. I had no idea.
To complete the picture, we have to mention there are puka shells.
Yes. I am sleeveless and white and old.
I feel like Fast 5 in this series is actually, it's the most efficient title they have. Yeah, it's clean. It's
the platonic ideal of a Fast and Furious title.
It really
title.
Is. Yeah. So, it makes the point that this movie is the bridge to, I mean, the bridge doesn't actually come till the 6th movie, the physical bridge. But in terms of taking this franchise in the direction it's going, Fast 5 isn't a ridiculous title for me.
No.
It's one of the strongest ones. But obviously in a scale of 10, in the interest of that kind of economic phrasing, I'm going to give it a 5. Fast Five. That's how. All right. Yeah. That's how it works.
I'm just gonna say one because I find it very unridiculous. I think like they cut the Furious off to make it more aerodynamic and run faster.
Sure.
Nobody had time for all those syllables at the end. Like Fast Five. Boom. We're in.
Yeah, I like it. I like the car lingo too, Alonzo. I think before this, you know, once we're able to leave our houses, Alonzo's going, come on, go away. Hold on, that's a Chevelle right there, 1969.
I might learn what a Hemi is.
Someone's going to say to Alonzo, you can't get away from American Muscle, can you? I grew up saying, you had me. You never had me. You never even had
your car.
And then when the fucking Fast Five came around, I started saying, you know, there's going to be circuits. We need someone who can hack into those circuits. There's going to be walls. We need guys who could bust through those walls. Cutting to like the same group of like dummies that he's had around him for the last 5 years.
Coincidentally, we've already met all of those people.
Yeah. By the way, Don Omar and Tego Calderon are the two Puerto Ricans who are in my headcanon a gay couple. There's no one who could tell me that they are not. They are straight up a gay couple. Well, you never see them with women. They're always together.
I was saving that for a homoerotic moment. When Santos talks about how Leo can't cook, I'm like, what are we even doing here, gentlemen?
Well, I wouldn't put it past Vin Diesel to be like, we have no gay characters in this movie. Like, it's like, well, we'll make the two boring guys.
In Monaco, like, you know, with lunch with chicks.
Wearing matching tuxedos.
The one buttock-free scene of this entire franchise.
Okay. By what percentage does the craziness increase from the previous film?
Oh.
How high do numbers go?
Well, I'm going to go with, you can either look at it two ways. I'm going to look at it as 295%, which is Dwayne The Rock Johnson's body weight, or it gets 5% better, which is Dwayne The Rock Johnson's body fat percentage.
Oh, my God.
Because Dwayne The Rock Johnson is exactly what this movie needed. He drives me crazy in later movies, but in this movie, he's the exact, like, just fucking, you know... I'm trying to think of a movie that just added a character. He's the Poochie of the Fast and Furious franchise.
Well, what was great too is like, I remember seeing this. He was so jarring my first like blind watching, and because also this is like early Rock before Rock was really Dwayne The Rock Johnson. But this is like one of his first kind of forays into a big franchise. And I remember his big, what really threw me was how much bigger than Vin Diesel he was. And Vin was like presented as so big in the previous movies. And he, you know, he was hitting the iron. He was actually a little buff, but you see him up to The Rock. There's like, there's no way this man would punch you and turn you to dust.
The Rock is the Heather Locklear of this franchise.
Yes. I guessed by your hair and beard color that you might be old, but that reference really with your fella. Now I see why we're connecting here, Alonzo. I was like, thank you. That's the exact topical reference I was looking for. Like, no, that's the first one I've gotten.
I'm keeping it fresh here for the kids.
They can go Google Heather Locklear after they look up charisma. Yeah.
Who Shot You? The number one podcast listened to in browser by old me.
Sponsored by AARP.
You heard what happened at the table read for Fast Five, right? Like,
No. Well,
there's
give
like
it to us.
There's like legends that The Rock showed up for the table read and Vin Diesel saw him and was like, and Vin Diesel was looking all soft and puffy and like apparently went on like a straight cycle right after they walked out of the table read.
Oh my gosh.
And then he did a Men's Health interview and where he talked about how like it was like fitness to play the character Dominic Toretto. And he, in the interview, says, like, now keep in mind, this guy doesn't have time to be going to the gym all the time. He's kind of, and he's drinking Coronas and working on, he already had the justification for why he was
amazing. He is a fugitive from justice. He can't have a gym membership.
Well, if I can make the analogy even more personal, I feel Vin Diesel's pain in that I was like the biggest, strongest guy in comedy for a while. And then if he fucking rolled up and he's like, He's not just big for a generation like I am. He's like actually muscular. This, I felt like where everyone's like, yeah, Gabers can bench 300. It's like, yo, have you met my friend Iffy? I'm like, oh, you gotta be kidding me. As he tackles me through a sheetrock wall at the UCB green room.
He's the guy who cracks walnuts with his thighs during his tight 10.
Just eat nuts. You want some? I mean, talking through, tackling people through sheetrock, do any of the characters exhibit superhuman powers or capabilities?
I'd like to add that in you guys bringing up The Rock and Vin Diesel and their size and whatever, I actually considered a superhuman power the idea these are the two least fleet-looking people, and yet there is an extensive foot race amongst the favelas. And I'm like, those guys can run 20 yards max. Like,
neither of those. They're zero, not doing cardio at all.
If The Rock tried to land on the roof of a favela, he would end up in fucking, like,
China.
I don't know. Yeah, Southeast. Yeah, yes. The South Pacific. He would shoot through the fucking crust.
So We're gonna jump into the songs. You know, John, you may not know this, but I've been rating every song, because if you don't know, every Fast and Furious has like a song that just that goes with the movie, that pairs with it. And this is when we run into the, like, funny enough, in these series, there's always like two. There's like one that like really slaps and everyone fucks with, but they're the one that was supposed to be the hit just kind of gets lost.
They're always trying to pop off two of them, and one is good, and one is just like, we got this one for cheap. Let's see what we could do with it.
Yeah, both songs done by Don Omar, who plays the not dreadlocked Puerto Rican guy, because they're both reggaeton artists. I knew when I saw them, because I grew up in LA. Reggaeton took over the city.
I went to school dances in the 90s in New York. Reggaeton was pretty big there as well.
It's very important. Don Omar is Santos, not Leo, because, you know, these characters have such depth.
Yeah, yeah. I just always were like, oh, you know, the reggaeton gay couple.
The reggaetones.
Donzo Cudero is the one that everyone pretty much attributes, which is the... which is a solid slap. It's very fun. It makes me happy. I listened to it and made me forget about everything that was going on. And then the second song is How We Roll. Now this one isn't as great. It's 3 out of 5. So out of 10 NOS canisters, how would you rate the fastness and furiousness of this movie? I'll let John start since he's our guest.
I'll do a 6 in fastness, but a 9 in furious and furiosity.
Ooh, okay. All right, breaking up the canisters. I love that.
Because it's fast as it should be, but it is rather furious.
I like that. I'd sort of split the difference for me. This is, I'm going to say a 7.5. Can we do half points?
Oh, yeah.
I think that they are on the right track. There's such stupidness. The idea that there's any speed implied at all when they are dragging a 5 kabillion ton vault around a city, and yet it still did manage to look like they were, you know, moving faster than not moving, which is what they would actually be doing if they were trying to do that. I was impressed by any of that.
I think that vault is a metaphor for Vin Diesel. he weighs these movies down, and yet somehow they are fleet, you know. Go figure.
Some movies have technical advisors. This movie takes physicists out behind their labs and shoots them in the head.
Pants them under the bleachers.
Yeah. Physicists are like, excuse me? They're like, don't worry about that.
We have Professor Bugs Bunny here to walk us through it. We got everything from Acme. I go 9 cans. This is about as fast and furious as this Michigas gets. So we're heading into like my undeniable favorite of the franchise to date. But this is right up there.
Yeah. Yeah. For me, this is, you know, at the time was definitely a 10 out of 10. Watching it again, a 9 out of 10, because I know how much better it gets. But it truly, like, it's wild to think how this movie just revitalized this franchise for everyone, where there were just so many, and so many people who were like, oh, I really did not care for the Fast. I was like, then start at Fast 5. Start at Fast 5 and you'll be good to go. Like, I'm loving it.
It's like a big, like, middle of season 2. That's when they really get
funny.
You can skip all that. It's Harry Potter 3. Yeah.
Don't worry. Once you get to 6, they're going to have a vignette of everything you missed.
Yeah. Yeah, just pay attention to the credits. It's all in there.
Yeah. They're going to bring you up to speed. Okay, we're going to take a break, but when we come back, we'll be talking about 2013's Fast and Furious 6, just as soon as we hear from another one of the shows on Maximum Fun.
Hi, I'm James, host of Minority Corner, which is a
podcast that's all about intersectionality. It's hosted by James with a guest host every week,
discussing all sorts of wonderful issues, nerdy and political,
pop culture,
black queer feminism,
race, sexuality,
news.
You're gonna learn your history, their self-empowerment, and it's told by what feels like your best friend.
Why should someone listen to Minority Corner?
Why not?
Oh my god, free stuff.
There's not free stuff.
The listeners of Minority Corner will enjoy some necessary LOLs, but mainly a look at what's happening in our world through a colorful lens.
People will get the perspective of marginalized communities.
I feel heard. I feel seen.
Like you said, you need to understand how to be more proactive in your community, and this is a great way to get started.
Join us every Friday on Max Fun or wherever you get your podcasts.
Minority Corner. Because together, we're the majority.
Welcome back to Who Shot Ya. I'm your host, Ify Wadiwe. In the studio with me are
Drea Clark,
John Gabris,
Alonzo Duralde.
Now it's time to move on to 2013's Fast and Furious 6.
Yeah, it is.
Alonzo, would you mind reading the synopsis for Fast and Furious 6 we took from IMDb?
It would be my honor. Since Dom and Brian's Rio heist toppled a kingpin's empire and left their crew with $100 million, our heroes have scattered across the globe. But their inability to return home and living forever on the lam have left their lives incomplete. Meanwhile, Hobbs has been tracking an organization of lethally skilled mercenary drivers across 12 countries, whose mastermind, Luke Evans, is aided by a ruthless second-in-command revealed to be the love Dom thought was dead, Letty. The only way to stop the criminal outfit is to outmatch them at street level. So Hobbs asks Dom to assemble his elite team in London. Payment? Full pardons for all of them, so they can return home and make their families whole again.
So we're going to give our initial thoughts. And I got to say, this is really where this movie comes together, because we've said before, the heart of Fast and Furious is making sure that cars are the solution to the problem no matter what. And I think this is the first time that I felt like cars were necessary. I was like, yeah, no, they're using those supercars. They need someone who uses supercars. And I do want to say, I want to mention, this is the first time that we do see supercars, and not supercars as in like the $1 million supercars, but cars that have been modified for different activities, like flipping other cars by running under them. And I was on board from the beginning. This is when it really locked in that this is a superhero franchise, because that opening felt so much like an opening to like an Endgame or something, where you're literally running through the history of the team. Oh. It was great.
This movie, I remember thinking, like, I don't know who obviously they're in the credits somewhere. The casting directors of this movie, of like, I love that somebody was like, you know what? Go wild. Have fun with this one. So they bring in Gina Carano, who had just been in Steven Soderbergh's Haywire for like one of the apex moments of this entire franchise. Two of them, actually. Right. You get Joe Taslim from the Raid movies, which are like, you know, next level, incredible. Or Taslim, sorry. Joe Taslim from the Raid. Ify, have you seen the Raid movies? The Raid and the Raid Redemption?
It's my greatest sin.
It's a rectifiable sin.
I envy you getting to see them for the first
time. Oh my god. Everyone, I'm so ready, because I've seen at this point in movies, all of those actors have featured in other things doing kick-ass stuff. So you're like, I gotta see the origin.
Like, Seriously, have a towel. The Raid Redemption made me perspire. I was enjoying it so much. It's
oh my gosh, extraordinary. So excited.
So they bring in him from the Raid films. Then they also bring in Tura Lindhart, who had just been in Keep the Lights On, which is this like really intense queer indie about a couple breaking apart because of meth. And it's like, he's cast him as the Scandinavian car expert. Like, yeah, why not? Sure.
He's the sketchy dude who's like checking out the harpoon and the two women.
Oh, he's the garage guy that they come up for answers.
Let's talk about casting here for a second. It's all like that shit, like having reggaeton artists as actors. Vin Diesel knows what he's doing. He's casting the widest net, truly casting the widest net to get people to tune in because he has the advantage of having a movie that can have 21 main characters. So when you do that...
We even get the Bizarro World version of the main team in this movie.
Right, exactly. Well, you get the Bizarro version of the main team. You get all these weird cameos. It continues on in the rest of the movies even more. Like, truly... It's like Vin Diesel watches movies, then goes, yo, get that guy. This guy is fucking sick. Put him in Fast 9.
Yeah.
Tony Jaa's in Fast 7. He keeps going.
Stop. Yeah. It's not just that they get them. It's that they utilize them for their skills. Because there's so many times when people like bring in great casts and you're like, oh, we have all of these like, oh, like we have Sonny Chiba in a whole Fast and Furious movie who has like a conversation.
And sits at a desk.
Right. So in these movies, like if you're bringing in Gia Carano, she has an amazing couple of hand-to-hand combat fight scenes with another woman that are so great and authentic feeling and visceral. And then the same with, is it Joe Taslim?
Yeah.
And then, Taslim, yeah. Taslim, that you bring in these people with fight skills and then you actually let them fight, not just like, oh, they're in the background supporting in like a group fight. But then I also loved in the idea, because we made a joke at one point of how it is funny the escalation of skill set that all of our original family has. But in these hand-to-hand fights, I do believe that Letty always was able to kick ass. That girl's had biceps.
She is Michelle Rodriguez, after all.
Right? She is girl fight. But also, I love that there's an entire fight scene where both Tyrese and Sang-kun just get traded off, getting their asses handed to them. Back and forth by the same dude, because that's believable.
More importantly, though, like they cast people, they use their skills, and this movie gives them the space to do it. Because I've seen American movies where they cast these cool martial arts people, but then they edit the you know, with such a shredder that like Betty White could play the role and it wouldn't make a difference. But like you get these long takes of Gina Carano and Joe Taslim and Michelle Rodriguez doing their thing, and it's exciting to watch them get to do it.
The fun thing about that is because you know Vin Diesel and The Rock won't show themselves getting beat up. So it's like, hey, Han, Roman, let's go. We need a comedy of someone getting their ass kicked. And poor Tyrese is, I think he even maybe has said this in public, is like, I don't want to be the guy who's scared and getting his ass kicked in every movie from here on out.
That's fair.
Yeah. Well, one factoid I want to get for all the fast heads who are going in my research for a lot of the drama and things that go on in here. I knew that they probably wanted to do a sequel to Hobbs and Shaw because it ended on a cliffhanger. But what I did see that is also slated for release is a female-led Fast and Furious spinoff. So they're going to get all the and I'm like, give me that, because this movie, I will say one thing this series does, they are real good at like introducing badass women who you want to choke you, and that's one thing that me and John are very into.
Gina, I gotta back you up. Unfortunately, I gotta stand side by side here and say the second Gina Carano shows up, I'm like, break my fucking neck, please.
Crush my windpipe, Dame Helen Mirren.
It was so like I was on board. So yeah, give me that female-led movie. I cannot wait to see it.
That is the best woman-on-woman fight scene, I would argue, since Faster Pussycat Kill Kill.
Yes. Nice. Yes. Oh my gosh.
It rules.
I'm double fist pumping. It was so hype. Oh my gosh.
The one thing that's on display in this movie a little bit also is, talk about ultimate flex, killing Gal Gadot as one of your kids, a huge flex. Like, this is a kind of movie that could afford to kill Gal Gadot and still have enough characters in the cast. I feel like she's fucking, she's now Wonder Woman. She's huge, dude.
Do we think she was like, yeah, I'm out of here, so take me out in a very heroic way.
It's cool as fucking hell. And also,
percentage-wise, I do have to give up. They have always have more dudes than women. So, like, I do back up the boldness of that and also understand whatever contract things were coming in. But it does always, it's the Black Widow of it, of like, really?
Yeah.
You got all these dudes. We could have a super sacrificial moment.
Don't worry.
We're going to take out a lady.
Yeah, Eva Mendez is sitting on the sidelines like, let's go. Put me in, coach. It's time.
Yes.
It's time. Let's go.
She got the chalk on her hands. She's ready to go.
I'm clapping it in the air like LeBron.
I'm a diehard Carano head. I loved Haywire. Yeah. I absolutely loved it. Soderbergh kind of captured what she can do in this movie. I think in this one, she gets caught doing what she can do, awesome combat, but then they hang too many scene-ending lines on her, which is hard, which is, you're not helping her at all. She's not being protected at all. Like, when she's like, I thought you'd never ask. Like, it's like let's not center frame on Gina Carano, who is becoming an actor at this point. Like, she's not fully an actor.
Isn't she dubbed in Haywire? Like, I'm not kidding.
I think she's actually I've heard that. Gina Carano and Luke Evans have the same sexual chemistry as me and Alonzo. Like, same level of believable sexual tension.
Oh, yeah, that was the biggest twist for me. It's like, oh, okay, all right. But
also,
I mean,
you're like,
it's funny
so they're both straight. Okay, I was way off.
Exactly.
But John brings up something good that we're really going to see, and I'd like to leave little cliffhangers for next episode, because if you thought they left Gina Carano out to dry, wait till we get Rousey in here and just really just do her dirty. just really. Ooh, all right.
Oh my God, we aren't even at the dino test yet, dudes.
Yeah, we got to get out of 5 sleeveless shirts. How would we rate the ridiculousness of the title?
No. Well, it depends. I mean, like, if we go with Furious 6, which is sort of how they were marketing it, that's like a 3. But if it's Fast and Furious 6, that's a 1, because it's pretty straightforward.
I think it's Fast and Furious 6 is the title. Official. They said, Justin Lin said they were using both Fast 6 and Furious 6 in marketing. But the full title is Fast and Furious 6, which for me, yes, ridiculousness, that's a 1.
By what percentage does the craziness increase from the previous film?
5 is where it starts getting nutty, so I'd say here we're maybe goosing it about another 40%.
I'd put it up.
There's more mano a mano going on, and in ways that would like crush anyone's jaw within minutes of actual blows like this being exchanged. But the car stuff is only a little bit battier than the dragging a giant safe around Rio de Janeiro.
You mean when they bust out an entire... Is the tanks in this one, right? The tank on the, like, double...
The tank inside the truck and the...
There are, like, several times of people jumping car to car, cars that are moving at 100-plus miles per hour, over bridges. There's that whole thing of him just, like, Brian O'Connor, like, just... tapping a car to make it an anchor for a tank, just little nudges on the, it's ridiculous as shit.
Well, John pointed out earlier the midair grabbing of Letty by Dom before crashing into a windshield. Like,
yeah,
okay, and this is all before we get to the, like, there's like 103 minutes just of one plane taking off.
Oh yeah, that the so, last yeah. half yeah, yeah. hour the of this world's movie longest is the 10-mile runway.
Yes.
I got to give them credit for that. As insane and like, there's no way that there's a runway that's long. That's such a fun idea to just have a full on like convoy. Fury Road will knock it out of the park eventually, but for fucking Fast 6 to get after that, like to be like, yeah, fuck it, we'll shoot the whole last thing moving. Yeah. I think the most egregious use of physics in this movie, which is probably a fun conversation because there's, it's so like...
How do you pick one?
Yeah, how do you pick one? The Vin Diesel soaring across, catching Michelle Rodriguez and then protecting her. You can see that Vin Diesel's like, this is what I would actually do in real life. But the more egregious abuse of physics is the rocks casual comfort with leaping from like 100 feet in the air onto another moving object. He does it to Shaw's car, and then he does it out of the plane. Three people in a row jump out of the plane onto the Jeep, and it's just like, cut away. We don't have to believe, like, just cut away. We don't have to see one after another going, wow, I made it. This Jeep is driving exactly the speed I needed to.
And I know how to do this. Yeah.
Wait, this movie, I forgot about, this is another egregious, like, they're in the high tech, like when they cut to the high tech lab that Hobbs set them up with, and they're like all like kind of just like looking at guns and stuff. You're like, oh, that's pretty badass. Cut to after Toretto is shot, he's doing his own bullet removal. They don't have a medic for this fucking team of elite.
And they have one of those metal kidney shaped bowls from to plunk the bullet in.
Alonzo, I swear, I bring this up all the time on Action Boys podcast. The kidney shaped metal dish is so. It's so available. If I was a movie director, I would go to my props department and go, let me see your medical shit. And when they pull out the kidney bean, I'm like, this is for hospital shows, and just whip it across. Like, this is not readily available everywhere.
You're not allowed to put a bullet down unless you have the kidney shape.
It definitely could be in Gladware. Like, it could be, you could, and God help me, Toretto, you could put the bullet on the table.
On a little Limoges saucer or something.
Put it in a fucking jar of almond butter for all I give a shit.
Yeah. I want to go to most memorable lines because there was a line in this movie so memorable, I opened up Notepad to type it down.
I did too.
And that is
2 years.
When Letty is in the gang and they realize she has a connection to Dom, and she goes, are you team muscle? Don't make me come over there and make you team pussy.
I didn't even understand what that meant.
Because it's nonsense.
And also, I'm guessing that guy's team muscle.
Also,
aren't you team muscle? You're a head and a half taller than any human being that exists in this world.
Yeah.
You're actually a liability because we mostly use small, fast cars. I don't know why you're on this team.
We'd be much better off with like someone with a smaller, delicate frame. I detest the use of pussy as a pejorative. Like, it's such a dismissive, like, anything. Exactly. Oh, it's equated with femininity, so it must be weak and horrible.
It's crazy. Straight dudes throw that word around like it's not what we're pursuing every fucking waking moment of our lives. Like, it's insane. The straight dude's like, you're a pussy. I'm like, that's the thing we've been trying to find out about since I was 12.
That's all you exult. Yeah. My favorite line.
Hey, guys, say that sucks. Same difference.
Yeah. The quote that I had to write down was from Paul Walker, because things go askew, and he says in this like rallying tone for the team, we do what we do best, improvise. These motherfuckers don't improvise anything. Like, literally all of these movies are about them making these super intricate, elaborate plans.
And following them to the letter.
I was like, oh, someone should teach Brian what improvise means. Because I don't think he knows. Yeah, it made me laugh so hard.
It's not a quote, but one of my favorite things, and it happens in multiple Fast movies, multiple Vin Diesel movies, but it's very apparent in this one. Any reveal of Vin Diesel in white linen pants and a white fucking tank top, which happens in almost all the movies, they're randomly like, I was in hiding. And it's just like, what, dude? He's always the toughest dude in the room, and he's got white capri pants and a tank top on.
He's always wearing the same outfit that Diane Keaton wears in a Nancy Meyers movie.
Yes. He's truly dressed like he's under the Tuscan sun.
Yes.
When he gets old, he can play Southern lawyers.
Yeah. He's one step away from one of those like mortarboard hats coming out and being like, let's go get some clams. Yeah.
Okay, so I don't have any drama around the making of Fast and Furious 6, you know, offhand, any loaded up.
I'd like to take a moment to talk about something. You brought up retcon, the retroactive continuity of, and this franchise does it very hard. They have they do so much work. Like, they could release a mini series of little shorts that take place in between each movie that show you the work that gets, like, this is how they got over Jason Statham killing Han and became his friend. This is how they got over breaking up with Brazil Bay for Letty. This is how now. Han, like, they constantly have to do so much labor in between movies.
Just
it's like
go with it.
Yeah, I know Hobbs was a bad guy previously, but now he's a good guy. Gina Carano, good guy now, bad guy. Like, it's like keep. That should be the opening credits. Hey, just to keep you up, these are how everyone's allegiances and professions have changed since the last movie.
Yeah.
Roman is now a brain surgeon.
Yeah.
And Roman gets a lot of forehead shit in this. My man doesn't have a big forehead. He's just got a bicked head. So it looks like they go after him for the forehead. I'm like, bro, you can definitely roast everyone in this movie for different shit, but they don't have the balls to go after each other for real things because everyone's ego is tremendous.
Vin Diesel's physiognomy would keep a phrenologist busy for weeks.
Oh, my God, yeah.
Well, they would, like, touch his head, and it would be like, oh, my God, 10 imprints on his skull. It's like, this dude's still got, like, the baby soft skull development going on back here.
So we have, out of five slaps, the song. So I was wrong. The big song push for this movie was We Own It. It's so much so that it's called We Own It, parentheses, Fast and Furious. Like this is the song. Yeah, this one's a 4 out of 5 for me. Like I said, Wiz Khalifa has the best verse of his career. I'd say his verse on this song is probably like my favorite Wiz Khalifa verse that I've had. And it's just like the speed and rap, like it's a very different like style for him, because if you don't know Wiz Khalifa is a big stoner rapper. He's really like, he loves comparing himself into what's his name? Willie Nelson. Like, he wants to be like the Willie Nelson of hip hop. So he's very like, it's very chill. A lot of like chill party songs. So it's very like slow. And in this song, he like does a verse that's like so fast that like almost flexes that he does have the skill. Even though Black and Yellow, his earlier like mixtape.
It's because it's with 2 Chainz. It's an interesting thing of like actually having to change up styles to make them both work.
I have an observation about this song, which is the one thing I will have to say about any song in any of these movies. And this is it is just sitting there. I'm shocked that like nobody who wrote the song picked up on it. But there is a 2 lines here. One shot, everything rides on tonight. Even if I've got 3 strikes, I'm gonna go for it. That has 1, 2, 3, and 4 in those 2 lines, and all they had to do is one more line with 5 and 6 in it, and they didn't do it.
Oh my gosh, that is the biggest missed opportunity.
It was just sitting there. Get the guys who wrote 3 small words for Josie and the Pussycats in here. They'll figure out a way to work 5 and 6 into a line.
All right. Well, let's close it out with out of 10 NOS canisters. How would you rate the fastness and furiousness of this movie?
Oh, this is my 10. This is absolutely my 10. This is the peak so far. I have high hopes for 9, but this is, for me so far, as good as it gets. And I do want to mention Lucinda Sisson. That's the name of the casting director. Well done, man.
Oh, nice.
Fast 5 kicked it up a notch. The leap from 4 to 5 is a lot of NOS tanks. The leap from 5 to 6, less so. But like Alonzo's saying, I think 6 tightens it up a little bit, brings in way more cars, bad guy cars, good guy cars. Different kinds of cars, small cars, big cars, tanks, American cars, all your favorite kinds of cars. Gary Newman would cum his pants watching this. I'll give it 9 NOS tanks.
I'll back that. This is also I'm going to do 10. I love this movie. It's so, so, so stupid, and I love it.
Yeah, you know me. 10 out of 10. We're heading into deep, deep, deep fast territory. It's about to get wild. Hope you're ready for the ride.
Iffy, are you going to start saying to people as a pickup line, you never could resist American muscle?
Oh, Jesus.
yeah, but I'm going to say Nigerian muscle.
Oh, hell yeah.
You're going to take something that already doesn't make sense and just obliterate it.
By the way, I would love to see a Nigerian muscle car. That shit would be fucking tight.
If only Sense8 were still on.
See, we gotta make it happen. All right, we'll be right back after we hear from another show for Maximum Fun.
Hello there, ghouls and gals. It is I, April Wolf, I'm here to take you through the twisty, scary, heart-pounding world of genre cinema on the exhilarating program known as Switchblade Sisters. The concept is simple. I invite a female filmmaker on each week, and we discuss their favorite genre film. Listen in closely to hear past guests like The Babadook director, Jennifer Kent, Winter's Bone director, Deborah Granick, and so many others every Thursday on MaximumFun.org. Tune in if you dare.
It's actually a very thought-provoking show that deeply explores the craft and philosophy behind the filmmaking process while also examining film through the lens of the female gaze. So, like, you should listen.
Switchblade Sisters.
Welcome back to Who Shot Ya? I'm your host, Hippie Waddy Wayne, and in the studio with me are...
Alonzo Duralde.
John Gabris.
Drea Clark.
Now comes the moment where we decide which movie will move on to compete against last week's winning film, the original, The Fast and the Furious. I know this is a difficult decision, but we must decide whether Fast 5 or Fast and Furious 6 wins the drag race. Your picks, everyone. Let's start with, let's say, Drea.
Ooh, okay. Between Fast 5 and Fast and Furious 6, Fast 5 I give so much credit for like steering this boat of dumbness in the dumb direction. I'm sorry, this car of dumbness. How dare I?
Thank you.
Might be. But Fast and Furious 6 is where it's like, no. We're international. We're popping across country lines for no apparent narrative reason. We have a cast of at least 83 people at all times. We have no regard for physics. We have a lot of soundtracks. There's definitely going to be lower cleavage. For me, this is a Fast and Furious 6 as a victor.
Oh. Ooh. All right. Let's go with John, mostly because I already know what Alonzo's answer is.
Well, I'm going to throw my vote in the trash with a vote for Fast 5. Just because what Fast 5 did for not only the Fast franchise, but for movies in general was just like, it doesn't have to be a Marvel movie. They did, unfortunately, franchisificate the cinema world. They helped with that disgusting attribute that's happening. But more importantly, they just don't have superpowers and it's not based on a comic book. So for me, I got to go with Fast 5, fam.
Ooh. With me, you know, this is a real Sophie's choice. I love both my children equally. But if forced to choose, I'd have to say Fast 5 only set up what made Fast 6 a crisp, perfect movie. So I'm going with Fast 6.
Yeah, it's a photo finish. I mean, you know, there are no losers here. The both of these films, I think, are outrageously entertaining. But yeah, I agree with Ify and Drea. Fast 5 walked so that Fast 6 could run amok. So for sure, Fast and Furious 6.
All right.
So
what are we taking
this up against the previous one?
That was the first heat. Now it has to go up against the Fast and the Furious.
So now it pulls up next to the original car that Dom was first introduced in, to the much faster, more furiouser one that he's in the latest movie that we just saw. So it is now the Fast and the Furious versus Fast and Furious 6. Who's winning this drag race? John, your thoughts.
Look, it's hard. I hate to go against an original in any way, because the original is an original in that it's a car version of Point Break, but it's original. It's the original movie of this franchise. But I gotta say, I like the first movie a lot, and it hit hard when I first saw it, but Fast and Furious 6 is more in my wheelhouse of the types of movies I want to watch. I've only rewatched Fast and Furious once. I've now seen Fast and Furious 6 a dozen times. I don't know why. My vote's for 6.
Ooh. All right. Drea?
Yeah. I mean, it's kind of an unfair race. This is basically like my 1,000-year-old Ultima versus any of the car titles that Ify has said over the last few weeks that I didn't remember. The Fast and the Furious is a perfectly serviceable and fun film, but the franchise that it's become, that Six embodies, is just out of this world, you guys. Out of this world. It's phenomenal. Yeah, my vote's with Six.
Yeah, I hate to once again screw over Ken Lee, the guy who wrote the original magazine article that the first Fast movie was based on, and then got zero dimes for any of the sequels because of the contract that he made the mistake of signing. But Six, no question, no contest. I mean, Fast and the Furious could very easily have been forgotten, but I think it is only as the sort of most base building point to the loony heights to which this franchise would ascend. Six, no question.
And you know my pick. This is hard. But, you know, in Cars, the old classics, they're beautiful. You like to gaze at them, but you're always trying to drive the newer model. So that's going to be the Fast and Furious 6 for me. So it wins. You know, I feel like I need some triumphant speech, but you know, that it wins.
No, I think you're, you did a nice Gia Carano ending of that, so that was like perfect. That was right where we wanted to leave that boat.
I thought you would never ask.
Before we get to staff picks, since we're discussing nothing but Fast and Furious films for the next couple of weeks, we wanted to spend some time highlighting an indie film that's out now. This is the Indie Movie Minute. Treya, I believe you had a movie that you'd like to discuss. So your time starts. Start your engines. Vroom! Now.
I do have a movie that I would like to start, and I know Alonzo is in agreement with me on this. It is called Shirley. It was one of the films that I mentioned in doing my Sundance wrap-up this year, directed by Josephine Decker. Most people, if you've seen Josephine's work, she did Madeline's Madeline, a previous Sundance film that came out the year before, but she also has some really great, very weird, fluid, dark, icky, squicky indies. Thou Wast Mild and Lovely, Butter on the Latch, and Shirley is such a great harnessing of Josephine's very distinctive style with Elizabeth Moss's performance as Shirley Jackson, the author. It is kind of one of those fictionalized historical films, and I think it's so great and has such a great feel to it. So people should check it out for her performance and for an interesting look into an American author of note. Am I sort of around a minute? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that was good enough. The time. It's just like this movie makes the length of a runway. You know, it's honestly however it's long we need it to be.
I like to follow my timelines. You guys know that.
All right, well, now it's time for staff picks. It could be any movie, in theaters, streaming, what have you. John, why don't you start?
Oh, shit. I've watched a lot of great shit in the last couple of weeks. But if I'm going to pick a movie that I've recently seen that stood out as very interesting to me, I got to go with Bad Education. It's a HBO film. Ooh. And it's super specific to me in that it is a true story of something that happened on Long Island, like while I was living there. But the important part is I think they get the sort of attitude of Long Island right in the negative version. finally, my people are represented. I mean, like, oh, good. They're shining light on how fucking scuzzy Long Islanders can be. So for me, and Hugh Jackman's doing great work in it. And if you haven't seen it yet, it's very good casting to have Hugh Jackman play the role that he's playing. I'll say no more. You guys can sort out what I mean by that.
And
it's got Allison Janney, which I think means it should be on your queue immediately, whether you want to or not.
All right. Drea?
Okay, so I have a more obscure indie film, but it's inspired by Fast and Furious 6, because if you'll remember, in their bizarro team-ups, the guy that's supposed to represent the Rock of the bad guy team is this very large Danish bodybuilder named Kim Cold. And Kim starred in a film by a filmmaker named Mads Matheson called Teddy Bear that we showed at the LA Film Fest a few years ago, where he obviously plays a bodybuilding Dane, but he's this very introspective, lonely man who's looking for love, who has a complicated relationship with his mother. He ends up traveling to Thailand, hoping to find a woman, and it addresses all of the red flags that come with all of that and the sort of sex tourism. But he does have a really real connection that does arise. But he has a beautiful performance in that, and although it's not what we generally think of when we think of people of like Hollywood casting people with a specific look to them. Kim Cold is a very big man and a very big bodybuilder, and seeing him play this very vulnerable character is such a nice showcase for the humanity in people. And so I recommend that. You can rent it on Amazon Prime. It's called Teddy Bear.
Ooh, all right. And Alonzo?
My staff pick is a shameless self-plug.
Hell yeah. You know we love those.
So next Friday, that is June 12th, I am going to be appearing on Turner Classic Movies alongside Dave Karger, hosting an evening of LGBTQ films. We're showing a 1930s comedy from George Cukor called Our Betters, the 1961 drama Victim starring Dirk Bogarde, and the 70s documentary Word Is Out. I was super psyched to talk about these movies and to be showing them on TCM. And then tune in again on the 26th, B. Ruby Rich, who coined the phrase New Queer Cinema and is one of like the great film critics out there, is hosting an evening with the German silent film Mädchen in Uniform, Cheryl Dunier's The Watermelon Woman, and Orlando, starring Tilda Swinton. So 12th nice. And 26th on TCM. Check those out, please.
Nice, and congrats.
Thank you. That's I'm awesome. Very excited.
Well, my pick, you know, I wanted to pick a movie, you know, that had to do with driving, a theme I should have picked up way earlier in this series, but we're going to start right here. And of course, you can't talk about driving. You can't talk about driving movies. You can't talk about getting jobs done in a car in a certain amount of time if you don't mention Drive, which was a turning point in my love for Ryan Gosling. After Drive, I could not get enough of Ryga. Ryga can do no wrong. I have not checked to see if he said anything about Black Lives Matter yet, so word's still out on that. But, I'm sure he did. He seems like a good guy, but...
And he's connected to this franchise via Eva Mendes.
Yeah.
Yes. Oh, my gosh.
He's Fast and Furious adjacent.
Yeah, Fast and Furious adjacent. But yeah,
He might be. He could end up in one of these movies down the line. Don't put it past.
You never know.
Like, you never know.
I know.
Fingers crossed.
Well, one thing I love about Drive, and is a thing that I've really appreciated in the rewatch of the original, is how well that first opening scene captures L.A. as he drives around, getting away from cops, and then ends up, unfortunately, at a Clippers game. But you know, it was way too well attended for a Clippers game. But then you know, that's an insider.
That's some
dig.
Real LA local shit right there.
Yeah, you wouldn't know. You know, I could see why no one would pick up on that. But yeah, this is it was solid. So check those out. All of those things. We have nothing but time now. So let's watch all the staff picks and let us know what you think, you know, especially if you check it out. Especially shout out to all the folks who have said that, you know, that by way, it's really at this point like a Mary Kay type situation of all the people who are like, oh, I saw Iffy getting into physical media because he saw Alonzo getting into physical media. So now I got some physical media. If me and Alonzo get enough of y'all in physical media, we get a blue Chrysler 300 that we can drive around.
I was going to say, when does this get kicked up the pyramid exactly?
Yeah. but yeah, so keep talking to us. I'm seeing it. It's good. And it's making me happy. And another thing that makes me happy are 5-star reviews.
Yeah,
if you
yeah.
leave us a 5-star review, we'll read it on air. Like this one from Bethany Sparkle Heart Sparkle 57163. I absolutely love this podcast. It is always satisfying to listen to people talk about what they are passionate about and knowledgeable in. They are also hilarious and never fail to make me laugh. This is a perfect pick-me-up podcast for movie lovers. Well, thank you, Bethany.
Aww. Thanks, Bethany.
Thanks, Ms. 57163.
Yeah, holding it down. Well, John, thank you for joining us. Anything Yay. You'd like to plug?
Yeah, if you guys are fans of movies, I have a movie podcast, which is we're wildly less informed than current company, but it's called Action Boys. It's on Patreon. It's boys with a Z. There is a bunch of free episodes. You can find that at the landing page of patreon.com/actionboys. We talk about classic action movies from our youth, me, Ben Rogers, and Ryan Stanger, and we talk about each movie for guaranteed longer than their runtime. Often, often over an hour longer. We have a 3-hour episode about Rumble in the Bronx, a 3-hour episode about Blade. These movies are 100 minutes.
It's a lot to unpack.
Tell you, there's a lot of garbage and little editing. That's all you need to know.
Oh my gosh. Well, thank you so much yet again. And again, the number for the Who Shot line is WSY-803-1664. And just a reminder, you can buy a Jumbotron on our show by going to MaximumFun.org/Jumbotron. If you have a comment or suggestion about this week's show, tweet at us at Who Shot Your Pod. Our Facebook group can be found at www.facebook.com/groups/WhoShotYourPodcast, or send us an email at WhoShotYou@MaximumFun.org. Alonzo, Treya, y'all are the best. You're my family. Another thing I did not get to mention is in 5 and 6, the first time we see people with beers that aren't Corona.
Because they are in Europe, after all, or South America.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh. That must be why. Okay. Good catch, you know, Alonzo.
The rest of the world laughs at our beer brands.
But don't worry. At 7, they fucking grind the gears to get Corona back in.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And literally have a moment where Kurt Russell says Corona.
I cannot wait. Our producer is Casey O'Brien, and our senior producer is Laura Swisher. This is a production of Maximum Fun. See y'all next week.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Audience supported.